I'm Gab, he's Jules. It's sunny and warm in West London. Summer is here, Jules. The Euros are here. The Copa America is here. We'll be getting into all that. Yeah. So many things going on. And we'll be getting into the Holland game as well. Because maybe your man Frank de Boer, but you want to revise a few opinions?
Best manager in the world,
there
Frankie.
There you go. But one place to start. Let's start at Wembley. I was there. It's weird being at Wembley with fans there.
Yeah.
For an England game. They beat Croatia 1-0. I'll tell you what, those first 15, 20 minutes, England came out of the gate so hard and so fast. Everything worked. And I thought to myself, wow, they're not going to keep this up, are they? And they didn't, but they got the 3 points. And they all around, I thought, played well.
Yeah, I still think they could have kept up a bit more the intensity, I thought.
And
It was hot, maybe. And maybe it was.
Croatia's further south than England, as you know.
So they're more used to their heat, you mean? Maybe. It's what we said on Thursday on the show. If you let Croatia dictate the tempo of the game, which is 2 miles an hour because they're an old team that keep the ball really well, then that's where I think you almost fall asleep yourself as an opposition team. However, if you go for that, if you press, if you play with intensity, then that's where you're too good for them. And I just think England didn't do enough of that. It doesn't matter. They won. And I think psychologically, the fact that they never, ever won their first game, their opening game in a Euros, great. The fact that it was at Wembley, even maybe there was a few ghosts from 96 Euros, Wembley, and that game against Germany, and Southgate missing his penalty, whatever. Psychologically, great. And now, let's hope that we can get a better England. Because I was still left a bit like, okay, they won. Sterling scored. Good for him.
But you're a harsh critic. Look, I don't think... I thought there was no way you could keep up that pace of the first 15, 20 minutes, the whole game. What I liked about it is they took their foot off the gas, understandably. Croatia grew into the game. But then when they needed to kind of get things going again, they did it. So, I mean, I think if a team can raise that energy and that level in certain key moments in the game while not conceding defensively, I'm okay with that. I was really interested when I saw the lineup. There was so much debate, back three, back four, what's he going to do? He certainly threw us a few curveballs, starting, I think, with Raheem Sterling at center forward. I think he was a little bit hit or miss. Obviously, he scored the winning goal, a lot of credit. He won the Man of the Match award. I don't know. I think maybe somebody else might have won. But the one thing, when Sterling is not on top of his game, he still works incredibly hard and is incredibly, I think, intelligent off the ball defensively. So again, with hindsight, I didn't think maybe it was that surprising when the alternatives are, you know, Marcus Rashford, who I don't think is fully fit yet. So maybe that made sense. Sancho. Maybe can we give Southgate some love there?
Yeah.
Sancho wasn't even in the 23, neither was Ben Chilwell, which kind of surprised me, unless they're
completely
not fit.
Yeah, I was really surprised. I think Sterling has lost a lot of confidence. And maybe that goal and the fact that he's winning goal and it's at Wembley where he grew up and all of that, maybe that will bring back a lot of that confidence. But I thought the first chance that he had, he was offside anyway, but the flick from Kane, he didn't know what to do. When he crossed the ball, when Mount put it over the top, he crossed the ball, he didn't know what to do. In the second half, that volley blasted over the bar again. And he scored. He got a bit lucky on the way he took that goal. So, but good for him if that can bring back a bit of confidence, because when he's confident, I think he's a much better player, of course, like all the players. But I still think it was a huge gamble to play him. That could have not paid off.
We'll be breaking England down further, including Calvin Phillips, the Yorkshire Pirlo, as he's now known. But
please.
A word on Croatia. Inevitably, Dalic... He's a human being. He's going to be torn between the veterans and the youngsters. I thought Gvardiol did really well on the right. Surprised Brdarić, but I think they're missing what they do miss is a physical presence. We saw Petkovic come on. He does provide the physical presence. Problem is, he's not particularly good.
No, he's not very. I think Brekalo has to start. He brings so much more pace and energy than even a Kramaric playing on the right hand side, which I don't think is his position. I think you're right. He's tempted to keep the guys who did so well in 2018, or most of them. But I don't know. I was very disappointed. I tweeted that They got four nutmegs in the first half, which I thought was amazing. And I love a nutmeg, as you know, but it's not good enough. They're not a good team.
No, and I think
together, they've got talent, but
it's uphill now for Croatia, but I still think they can advance to the knockout phase. All right, Jules, let's get a little more granular here. With England, Pickford, I have to mention this. I mean, he didn't have any particularly big saves to make or whatever, but I did notice that, again, his kicking, I think there were at least three different clearances where he either shanked it or sent it straight out. Is that just nerves? I mean, I don't expect him to be Ter Stegen.
Yeah. But he's got an incredible power in his left foot, but no accuracy whatsoever. He doesn't know, you know, he can't play from the back. Technically, he's not good.
Yeah, I guess it's not necessarily a big deal if he plays it safe all the time. It just he gave off the impression when he did that as somebody who, you know, maybe was more mental than technical.
But you know what fascinates me, just slightly quickly on this debate. Left-footed players are usually more gifted technically than right-footed. Yeah, all of them. You know, okay, you've got some that maybe are not, but usually when you're left-footed, you are technically more adept than right-footers, right?
And I'm not 100% sure that's actually, because intuitively I would assume that would not be the case, because if you're right-footed, you face more competition, right? So there's I think 80% of the population is right-footed, let's say, right?
Oh, right, yeah.
So if we're on a team and let's say you and the producer Graham are, there's a spot for the left wing position and you're left footed, you're going to get it.
Yeah.
Even if Graham is more gifted and Graham has to go and play on the right against producer Freddie, who of course is much better, more technically gifted, right?
Of course. But there's something about left footers, you know, in the way they I think technically there is. But yeah, for goalkeepers like Lloris or Pickford, they're terrible with the ball. I don't understand it.
Like, I think as long as he doesn't have to play out the back. But it was just the clearances.
Yeah. I thought the same.
It's very deflating when it happens. But, you know, whatever. I don't think it's a big deal. I thought Stones and Mings did okay, but I think they would be better when Maguire is back.
There was your usual Stones mistake with England, though, that cleared the ball straight to Kramaric, who volleyed it wide.
I thought Kyle Walker at right back and obviously the other big one was he played Trippier as right-footed left back, which he's done very little. I thought that was odd. I don't know if it's not clear how fit Chilwell is. I wonder if you're Luke Shaw and you're saying, well, this guy's ahead of me. Presumably it's so that Trippier, because of his delivery on set pieces.
And experience, I think. This is the first game of the Euros at Wembley. I think you go for experience. Against a team like that, who is full of experience, I think you go with it. I think it was a mistake. I would not have played Trippier there.
You would have played Luke Shaw.
Yeah, 100%. Or Chilwell. 100%. Oh. And again, it goes with what kind of football you want to play. And maybe this game was not for attacking fullbacks. And in the end, Walker had almost zero deliveries. Trippier didn't bring anything forward. So maybe the idea was, and the game plan was like, let's not do anything crazy. Let's not just go all gun blazing. And Luke Shaw is so good going forward that you don't play him for that, plus the experience of Trippier. But it was weird.
That is a good point. I thought there was very little from both fullbacks.
So I think it must have been...
That might have just been the way the game unfolded. I do think we have to praise Declan Rice in front of the back four in the sense that he did what he was there to do. But obviously Calvin Phillips is the guy who... It's a neat story in the sense that if these Euros had been played when they were supposed to be played, he would have still been in the championship with Leeds. And
never
I think it's safe to say he would not be playing for England. There's a different role because for Leeds, when we've seen them in the Premier League, it's a different role in some ways in the sense that, you know, they're so attacking, they got so much movement in front of them, but obviously he plays further back.
Yeah, he's the holding.
It was very much a 4-1-4-1 in this situation.
Yeah.
And I think that was also because Mount spent a lot of time tracking Modric, and so you needed somebody to press Brozovic.
Yeah, and make those runs forward too, which he did.
Which he did.
Yeah.
And obviously that led to the goal and everything. So I think we do need to praise Southgate there.
Yeah.
Foden starting, I have to say, I have to tip my hat, Foden should start. I don't think there's any debate there.
No, at all. No, at all. But he should have given you more. The first 15 minutes, as we said, great. And that shot, I think if Guardiola is a shoe size below than what he is now, he doesn't just even touch the ball. And I think he goes in from the post inside the goal and they score. But I expect more from Foden than what I saw yesterday, 100%. And from Mount as well. And even if Mount's instructions were clearly, look out for Modric when we lose the ball, make sure, and because Mount is so disciplined, I still think that with the ball, I would have liked to see more of those passes, like the one for Sterling, more from Mount in the last 30 yards than what we saw on the game.
Maybe I got caught up in the excitement of Wembley. I thought they were generally okay. I don't have a problem.
Yeah,
if
yeah,
you send Mount out
okay,
there and you say, like, Mason, you're playing in this position, but we're going to need you. Most important part of your job is going to be off the ball.
Yeah, that's fair enough. If this is true, but if I ask you, what did Foden do in the second half? Tell me one thing that Foden did in the second half.
He was a decoy. I think effectively, yeah.
Yeah, but
again, there you get into the five substitutes, the fact that he does have a lot of options in that position. Yeah. I think Southgate, or I think all managers, to come around the idea that maybe the way to do it when I have so many options is I give you 45 minutes of total 100% Foden energy.
Yeah,
and then
yeah,
I bring
yeah.
on a fresh guy for the second 45.
Yeah. And I think psychologically, he was his first ever Euros game.
Of course. And he's still
young. He's still young. And that's why I would have brought Grealish on, even for 2 minutes, even at the end when
just
you
just to
know
get the applause.
Yeah, and just get the, okay, you've done it now. You've played in the Euros before, and I think you take a lot of the pressure away from whenever he's going to play more, if he does play more at some point.
Harry Kane. Part of me feels that he had a quiet game. Yeah. Obviously, certainly in terms of chances, unless I'm forgetting something, but the one at the far post when he nearly injured himself, I don't think he contributed much there. He did have Caleta Carr and Domagoj Vida. Those guys don't mess around.
No.
I thought he kind of sacrificed himself in a more physical thing. A couple times he went off he came back, but not as often as he does for Spurs, to receive the ball.
No, yeah, he didn't drop as much.
I don't have a problem.
Austria.
Yeah, I don't have a problem with him just tying up the central defenders and leaving it to others to make the runs. Mm. I don't. And you're making a face because you expect more from Harry Kane.
He's not Weghorst or he's Harry Kane. He's not there to get, you know, to just keep busy the two centre backs from the opposition team, and I guess free the space for Raheem Sterling, which he did on the goal. It's Harry Kane. He will score you two goals with one chance. Give him the ball. Feed him. You know that I like, feed the beast and he will score. If you don't feed Harry Kane, he's never going to score. And I can't believe you've got such an amazing striker in your team and there's not more...
He's not the focus.
Exactly. Or patterns of play to serve him and to feed him the ball and to create stuff for him. There's no crosses yesterday, nothing. Nothing coming into the box, apart from the one that he misses in a way and hurt his shoulder. Nothing.
I think it's because if you make Harry Kane the focus... Well, first of all, I think Southgate to some degree feels that he's got a lot of other talent in attacking positions other than Kane. If you make Kane the focus, the problem is, should something happen to Kane, Calvert-Lewin is, I think, very different characteristics to Harry Kane.
Yeah, yeah.
And I think he's very mindful, and so does Rashford, should Rashford be an alternative up front. So I think he's very mindful of that, maybe too mindful. The 3 points are important. I don't expect Harry Kane to go and score a goal every game when playing for England. I just think it's a different role that he has there. And for me, he got the job done. As far as moving on to Croatia, though, what surprised me, Kovacic, throughout their whole run in the World Cup, Kovacic was always a guy coming in from the bench because they had Rakitic in there. He seemed to defer a lot to sort of seniority and status. We saw Kovacic in there, and I thought this would worry me a little bit. I thought they really, really struggled. I know they were able to slow the game down eventually.
Yeah.
But I thought, just keep the ball all day and wait for Rebic or Kramaric or Perisic to get a one-on-one, get a set piece. You know, do it that way.
Yeah, completely.
They weren't able to do that.
No. And I thought I don't know, I thought a lot of it was ball to feet. There was no movement off the ball from anyone of the front three or even the front four. They tried to press at times. It's just when Vasako and Vargel on the two wings went forward a bit, and then they had a few players in there. That's when England, and we saw it with the only chance they had on that Stones mistake, that's when they almost created something. But apart from that, apart from nutmegs in that first half, there was just nothing else. And you don't win football matches by nutmegging the opposition. That counts only in my world, other world. And I'm just like, so what are you trying to do? How do you think you're going to win this game? Unless, like you said, it's just set piece, we have a corner, we have a free kick. Otherwise, I thought it was, and we said, half jokingly, half seriously on Thursday, oh, they're a team of OAPs. But the way they played, and I know you're right, it was really hard. But I was like, and they will go through because...
They will go through. Yeah, and it could be completely different.
Like, oh, wow.
I do think there's still a lot of fine-tuning that Dalic needs to do. And I think...
He needs younger players.
He has some younger players in the squad.
Yeah, but like he needs to make changes
Brekalo. I'd love to see Brdaric play as well in certain situations. And again... The Pekovic solution, like I said, he's not good on the ball, but you could see when he came on and he went nose to nose with Tyrone Mings.
Oh, completely.
All of a sudden.
And if you cross the ball well and if you put balls in for him, then that's where he's going
to
be a threat.
He can get to you. All right, so more to come from Croatia, though. I got to see them again, Jules, because I'm going up to Glasgow.
Oh, yes.
On Friday, I'll be watching them against the Mighty Scots.
Yeah.
Sorry, not against Mighty Scots, no, because they're playing England. Yeah. I'll be watching against the Mighty Czechs. There you go. So stay tuned for that. We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search. Match with Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/gab. Just go to Indeed.com/gab right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/gab. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed. All right, Jules. It happened. Frank de Boer leads Holland to a 3-2 victory.
He won a game.
Against Ukraine. He won a game. He's undefeated in the tournament.
Undefeated. My boy.
Come on. 3 at the back. It wasn't so bad.
It wasn't. And they played well in the first half. They could easily have been 3-0 up at halftime.
They didn't concede in the first half.
Ukraine were just horrible.
Ukraine is individuals.
Yeah, that first half. I still think this is not a team that is suited. Well, they can play a 3-5-2, but it's a team that would be much better in a 4-3-3 formation. I think if the chances in the first half don't fall to Dumfries, but to a Daniel Malen or to a Calvin Stengs or whoever can play there, even a Memphis Depay, then it's a goal, and then you don't go at halftime 0-0, not really being sure of what can happen. But there was a lot of good things in that first half and in that game overall, despite the fact that Frank de Boer almost managed to mess it up again. Why would you touch your defense when you're in complete control, 2-0 up, at home in a game like this, and you just need to see out the game? We're taking off half of your team, of your defense.
I suspect it has to do with the fact that, you know, that defense, obviously with De Ligt also out, I think he thought Daley Blind.
Right, can't play 90 minutes, Daley Blind.
And he's older. He's not super quick to begin with, right? Timber is a younger player.
Yeah.
I'm assuming that was his thinking.
Yeah.
But no. And look, in the end, Ukraine's two goals. I mean, one, there were two great goals. And the first one.
The marking from Weghorst on on Yaremchuk is dodgy. Okay,
but if you want to go there, then Haaland's first two goals were also defensive screw-ups.
Buchan, yeah.
In fact, the third one, too.
Why is he doing?
The goalkeeper seems to move. I know he's very young and we should be supportive and whatever, but he moves in slow motion.
Completely. And there's a spin on the ball, to be fair, on the header. But still, and he should have cleared it off big time before that. So, and Shevchenko said at the end, when you make mistakes like this at that level, you can't come back from them. However, Holland would have won even without the mistakes because, as we said, they were good in the first half. And Wijnaldum, it's funny because we said about Calvin Phillips playing with England in a different position to what he usually does with his and being amazing. Wijnaldum played in a different position than what he's done at Liverpool for all those years and was outstanding. And I think some people will be surprised. Oh, what, he can score goals now because he never scores with Liverpool. Oh, he can do that. He can almost play as a 10. Well, yeah, it's not because a player plays in a certain position with one team because that's what the manager wants of him. Then he can't play other positions.
Yeah, he's done that before also. He did it at Newcastle and he did it before.
Didn't he?
Was it at Eindhoven he was up before Newcastle? Yeah. And I think he needs to do that in the 3-5-2 because it's either he breaks or Frankie de Jong breaks. And I think Frankie de Jong actually can break and can get you a lot of goals because I think he's a phenomenal player.
Completely.
However, on this team, the way they're set up, he probably sees it as maybe it's better if Frankie de Jong isn't the guy continually making those runs forward and moving forward. And maybe it's better if we defer to Wijnaldum on that one.
Yeah, and he played slightly higher up. But if you play 4-3-3, I think with the Runes hitting and then de Jong and Wijnaldum, you have even more of a threat, especially in half spaces, with them two going forward than what we saw on Sunday night. That's all. And they won, and thank God for him that he won for the ball, because had they drew that game 2-2, you can just imagine.
How did Ukraine look to you? Because we were excited. I was excited by the, oh, look, Zinchenko in midfield and stuff. Did you feel a little bit let down? I mean, obviously.
I thought it was a bit underwhelming.
Yeah, it's a good Dutch midfield.
Yeah.
But I still would have expected Zinchenko to be able to to light the play a little bit more.
Completely. And I think maybe the early change and Marlos coming on was not the plan at all. And I think it must be hard for anyone to change everything after 30 minutes and have a different player coming on with a different profile. But you're right. I thought it was really disappointing. Even a draw would not have been, I think, a fair result for them, because I thought they were second best pretty much all the game. And Zinchenko making the mistake on the third goal because he's on the marking with Dumfries and got beaten in the air, I think summed up his game really well. That he was just not in it at all.
It's weird with Sheva because, you know, you figure you're two goals down because of two defensive errors. You get back to 2-2 because you have the individuals who can do that. And then another defensive mistake. And then it floors you. I mean, how does he come back from this?
So the other games would be easy. Well, it should be easier.
On paper, yeah.
On paper, for sure. Well, certainly the North Macedonia. So they can still go through. It's just that we have seen them so solid before. And I go back to that France game where they drew 1-1, where tactically they were so good. And it felt like they never really turned up. And again, the change so early in the game might have disturbed them a little bit in the way they had approached that game. But yeah, they were just never able to respond to the intensity that certainly the Dutch put in the first 20, 25 minutes.
All right, Jules, let's get a little more into this Holland team.
Yeah.
Because again, I think we do need to give, credit. You gave credit to Frank de Boer in this
well.
Game.
They played well.
There was a scenario where they play well, they score the two goals with, like as I said, a good level of fortune. But then at 2-2, they fall apart because it's De Boer and whatever. Yeah. But that didn't happen. Which to me says, at least to some degree, these people have faith in De Boer. The guy flying the plane over the stadium may not, or over the training ground with the 4-3-3 may not, but the players are professional and they go out and they execute what he wants them to do.
And they might prefer the 4-3-3, and I think De Ligt and Depay certainly said it, but if they go and play 3-5-2, they're going to go and play 3-5-2 and they're there to win matches, and especially when you play at home, at the Johan Cruyff Arena, the King and the Queen are there. You know, it's like, it's a special game. It's not Estonia in a friendly somewhere that you don't care about. So, of course, you're up for it. And I think they showed that intensity. Be careful not to miss too many chances. And you and I are big Voigt fans, you know, and we love Weghorst. And he's such a... The story is great. And he loves playing for his country so much. And he had to wait for so long. And the path was so hard. And you saw what it meant to him to score the goal. But when you go down to the last 16 and quarters and semi, you can't miss five clear chances like they did, like Dumfries one. I mean, come on, at that level, you can't miss a header in the 6 yard box like he did, not even putting on target. So whether that's Depay or Gini or whoever or Weghorst, that they would have to be far more efficient than what they did.
Before the tournament, I thought that, you know, obviously I'm not saying Memphis Depay is their best player, but I thought he would be absolutely critical.
Yeah.
In terms of what they produce going forward. Mm. Because when you think about attacking players, especially in the 3-5-2, you know, De Jong and Wijnaldum are further back anyway, and we praised Wijnaldum before for what he can bring offensively, but he's still Wijnaldum. Weghorst is Weghorst. So I thought it was going to be a big onus on Depay. And I was thinking back what you said before about Harry Kane, you know, putting out a lineup in to serve your best players, your difference maker. Depay, I think, represents a much bigger percentage of the Dutch attacking output than Kane does for England, because Kane's got other guys around him. Do we think this formation suits Depay?
No. Not at all. And it was good, but look at the first chance early on, where he runs for 50 yards.
Yeah.
And I think if you play the 4-3-3 and he's a false number nine and you've got two wingers who run into the spaces that he will free, and this is so much better. And that's why they did so well with Koeman.
He plays in a two a lot at Lyon, but obviously it's different if it's a two and a 4-4-2, as opposed to having Van Aanholt and Dumfries as your, you know, there's just a quality gap there.
Yeah, again, and those wing backs, you play with a back three or back five, is to put crosses in, right? Yeah. And as we said, Weghorst is one of the best headers of the ball in European football right now. There's 14 crosses in the game yesterday on Sunday night. Only four of those 14 were successful. So it's not even if you're using that system that you're playing in that is so controversial and that everybody's talking about, and use it to his best to make the most of it. It's not.
Yeah, I think there's a quality issue too. Dumfries and Van Aanholt are, I'm not saying it's a bad way, but they're not, there's a reason they're not stars. They're ordinary players. I have no idea about Dumfries, but I know Van Aanholt obviously played in a four for most of his career, certainly here in England.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden, it seems like a weird distinction, but when you play in a four, you're almost always starting. You're either overlapping or you're getting the ball, you know, played in front of you.
Yeah.
When you play in a five, you are a lot of times getting the ball with your back to the opposition goal. You have to turn. It's not just a question of running into space. It's just a very, very different interpretation. And you need to be able to do that. You need to be technically, I think, more proficient than Van Aanholt and Dumfries are, frankly.
Yeah, completely. And you can have attacking fullbacks even in a four. We saw that with Italy, for example.
Of course, yeah.
So it's not, I don't understand this obsession that he has with this back five when you don't even make the most of that formation and you could still have so much input in a different formation with the players that you have in that squad.
All right, because it's called the Gab and Jules Show and I'm one half of it, I'm going to digress to something completely different and unrelated because I put this out on Twitter last night and I was shocked by the responses, okay?
Okay.
I know you haven't had time to think about this.
No, they're gone.
But I said, just for fun, all of the 24 managers in the Euros, if we're talking about technical ability as a player, I gave my top five.
Okay? Oh, go on. That's good because, just quickly, L'Équipe this week have done features on those managers, current managers, who were players before, just tell the stories of who they were as players. Okay. So Moncho, of course, and Deschamps, and Luis Enrique, and all of that. Okay. So I'm really curious to see who your top five.
So I'm not going to argue that these are the best players. I'm not ranking them by who's the best. Just who is the most technically gifted?
So who was the most when they were playing?
Yes.
Okay.
Right. So let's just be very clear. These are very different things.
So the
winner
is easy.
Who?
Mancini.
Thank you.
Surely.
I had Mancini at one, I had Sheva at two. I had all these people saying, no, Sheva was much more skillful than Mancini.
No, come on.
Mancini couldn't get into the Italy side regularly.
No, that's Sheva
won the Ballon d'Or. Thank you.
Oh, no, okay. Come on. As much as I love Sheva, this is, for me, I'm with you.
Sheva is very, very gifted technically as well. And if you want to say Sheva was a better player than Mancini, that's fine. You can go ahead and hold that opinion. But in terms of technical ability, there's no compare. Thank you. Somebody who does a bit. And then my three after, because Mancini and Sheva, there's obviously a gap between them and the others, right? But then my next three were Paulo Sousa, Lucho, and Frank de Boer.
Yeah.
People come back. Oh, Deschamps, Dillon. Deschamps, come on. You want to say Deschamps? Thank you, right?
And he's my boy.
He's your boy, right? You want to say Deschamps was a better player than Frank de Boer, had a better career?
With the ball, no.
Go for it. But with the ball, right?
Definitely not.
Why do people struggle to understand this concept?
They don't remember, maybe. It's, you know, Deschamps is a long time ago. Amongst your followers, there's a lot of people who would have only seen him play.
Yeah, but it's not like I mean, Sheva, Mancini, all these guys were a long time ago, right?
Yeah, but Mancini is even older than Sheva. I think there's a lot of players who follow us, who listen to the show, watch the show, that are more familiar maybe with Sheva than Mancini as a player, as in the Mancini from the '80s, late '80s, beginning of '90s, I guess.
Yeah, so I'm just going to just drop in a little thing about Mancini. One of the most difficult things that he had to deal with, and he's spoken about this, because, you know, this is a guy who at 16 was starting in Serie A and scored 9 goals as a 16-year-old in Serie A, which is unheard of back then, is the fact that he is so much more talented than everybody else, anybody he's ever played with or coached. One of the big frustrations was that when he became a coach, Lazio, which was Eriksen's assistant, they took over as head coaches, or no, he was at Fiorentina and then Lazio, but having to work with people who couldn't do the things he did. Mm. Glenn Hoddle spoke about this
Platini
as well, right?
Platini,
I can imagine even more. Platini probably grew frustrated straight away, right? But it was two things. One is they couldn't see passes and movements like he could see them. Mm. But then even they could see them, they had no idea how to execute them.
Yeah.
You know, I remember an old story somebody told me about Glenn Hoddle at Chelsea, where he's talking to his center backs and he's saying, like, okay, so if the ball comes in like this, you just chest it, turn, and then with the outside of your foot, you open it up the other way here, like this. And he goes and he does it. And they look at him and like, okay, it's fine. It's fine for you to do.
How do you
expect me to do that?
I know. Platini was the same. He had a very short spell with France, and that's the only spell, because I think he realized he was not made for it. But if they could not do something in training, he said, okay, give me the ball. And then they would give him the ball and say, this is how you do it. And then he would do it. Although he'd been retired for 10 years and they were all in their prime. And he was like, how embarrassing it is for your own players. But yeah.
It's a fun question.
It is.
I also troll people by suggesting that I thought Mancini was actually more technically gifted than Baggio, even. Other people will disagree. I know that's more controversial view, whatever, but other people may dispute that. But guys, technique is one aspect of the game, which has nothing to do with how well you read the game, nothing to do with what a great athlete you are, who's faster, nothing to do with more mentally strong.
Yeah, that's right.
We've seen so many hugely gifted technical players who never make it to the highest level. But technique is important when you're a coach, because part of your function is pedagogical. It is understanding what your players can bring. And so I think it generally works against super technical managers in many cases.
Not all.
Pep Guardiola was technically really, really good.
Yeah.
But, you know, and obviously it hasn't stopped him. Johan Cruyff was also technically very, very good. But whatever. I just thought it was an interesting debate.
It's a great debate.
I was just shocked by that Mancini Sheva thing.
No. But. Yeah.
The 2024 NFL Draft heads to Detroit, and it's time to see who gets the job.
Caleb is a unique and special talent throwing the football.
And what sets them apart?
The Heisman Trophy winner is Jaden Daniels.
All of the greats were hired here.
What a throw by Mahomes!
See who gets the job.
Are you ready?
The 2024 NFL Draft begins Thursday, April 25th on ESPN, ABC, and NFL Network.
Enough to bore. How about some quick hits instead?
Let's go, Gav.
Jules, there's one place to start, and it's with the wonderful news that Christian Eriksen is out of danger after his collapse on the pitch in the Denmark versus Finland game, which left us all terrified.
You know, I keep thinking that he was dead, that Christian Eriksen died on a football pitch during a Euros match. And of course, he was resuscitated. And it's amazing. It's an incredible story. And like I said on the show on Sunday night, Simon Kjær is, for me, the heroes of all heroes. Is what he did on that pitch on Saturday afternoon, the way he rushed towards Eriksen, the way he moved him on the side, the way he opened his mouth to make sure that he would not swallow his tongue, all the support that he gave to Sabrina, his wife, and everything that he did around that incident was just incredible. And only superheroes behave like Simon Kjær did on Saturday. And that fills me with so much emotion. And I don't know Christian Eriksen, apart from a few interviews or post-match flash interviews there and there, But it's just an incredible story.
Yeah, and we have to praise the paramedics who are out there, the medical staff, the Belgium team trainers. I was just struck by the way on social media, the way all this unfolded. Like it was almost like we were having a very much a shared moment, right? Where we're all confronted with our own mortality.
Of course.
You know, I wrote a piece on this about that is the one thing that all of mankind, whether you're born rich or poor or whatever, the reality, one thing we have in common is that it all ends one day. And to see it unfold like that, I was absolutely terrifying. Yeah. The elation when the news started to come through that he was going to be okay. Even the photo as he came off the pitch where, you know, he's wearing the gas mask, but you can see that he's awake. He's got his hand on his forehead.
His eyes open, yeah. But how does this happen, Gab? And this is one of the first things he said. He gave an interview to La Gazzetta, which shows that he's in much better spirits. But he wants to understand, how can someone in such a high-profile competitive industry that has doctors around them all the time, how can this happen?
And someone who's been tested every which way since from a very, very young age. I mean, we're not doctors. Sometimes medical science doesn't have all the answers.
No, of course.
We just have to be glad that he's still with us.
And we wish him well, Christian. Gab, there's been much to debate about whether the two teams should have come back into and play the game, Finland and Denmark, or not. Where do you stand on this? There was obviously two options, if we can call it like that, coming back later and finish the game like they did, or playing the next day, which was the status of UEFA in the games planning.
Yeah, that's right. UEFA have this contingency, and it's not just if stuff like this happens, it's also if the floodlights go out, or there's an evacuation, or a fire, or whatever. Or bad weather, to play the next day game at noon. I assume that's what they were going to do. UEFA, I think, assumed that that's what they were going to do, but they said, why don't we see what the two teams want to do? And my understanding is that, you know, Finland said, well, given what Denmark have been through, we'll go along with whatever Denmark says. But I think they were expecting the game to be played the following day. What happened in Denmark, Kasper Hjelmand, you know, he's answered this question 50 different ways about, you know, we didn't know, we weren't ready to play, but we wanted to get it over with. It's a tough one, putting the onus on the coach and the players. But also, I think I want to remind people that it's not just the coach and the players. It's also the Danish FA who would have been part of the decision. You know, they do have psychologists and therapists there who evaluate it. I think it's a lose-lose from UEFA's perspective. I don't see any point in hammering them over this, right?
No,
if you tell them you have to play the next day, and then, you know, some therapist, you know, was going to pop up like a mushroom and say, "Oh no," you know, therapeutically, once they knew he was out of danger. I think we can agree if the worst had happened, and if he had passed, then there was no way they could have continued playing.
Yeah.
He would have played the next day. But it's a lose-lose.
Yeah.
Now, Jules, the match itself obviously isn't relevant here, but Finland did win 1-0 and took a huge step towards the knockout round.
Incredible, their first ever game, as we've been saying. They were the newcomers. They've never been at that kind of level before. And, of course, the circumstances of that game changed everything. But yet, for them to come back and find a way of winning, even if there's a mistake from Kasper Schmeichel, even if it's not a great performance, and Denmark was so good up to the Ericsson incident compared to Finland.
Yeah. They have their own story to write.
They have their own stories, indeed. Romelu Lukaku scored twice as Belgium rolled over Russia 3-0. They look good, but maybe in a slightly different, more efficient way than before.
Russia was just so bad.
It's
hard to tell. Belgium, a lot of players missing. Castagne then got injured as well, though.
Yeah.
Your man Meunier turned up for once. How about that?
The postman.
And again, let's not forget the state of mind of both sets of players going into this, you know, because would have been completely affected by the Ericsson news as well. But 3 points, big win, move on.
Yeah.
Austria beat Macedonia 3-1. Jules, par for the course, no?
Yeah, I mean, they struggled. They took the lead and then Goran Pandev, of course. It could only be Goran Pandev with a backman mistake scored. And then you thought, maybe Austria, who have so much talent in the squad, but they found a way, and the changes that Franco Foda made worked out. Arnautovic.
Why was Arnautovic? He was such an angry young man at the end.
I think he's angry. Full stop. I think he would be one of them who'd be angry in his life. But that celebration was crazy, man. And Gab, we've just mentioned Goran Pandev, but I don't think we've spoken enough of the brilliance of the 37.
I just love the story, scoring the goal. Yes, it was a gift from the keeper, okay? Yeah, yeah. The whole thing was a car crash. It's just so wonderful seeing him out there because, you know, he's every man. And he's every man with a 20-year career in football. Unbelievable.
Second oldest goal scorer in the Euros.
Wales grabbed a late equaliser against Switzerland on Saturday. Jules, you're basically Welsh. Was this point deserved?
I think it deserved in the sense that they just never gave up, you know, and you go for it. I think they only had two shots on target, which was two Kiefer Moore's header. The first one was saved, and the second one is the goal. Great movement, by the way. If you're a young striker, or even not so young, listening to the show, go again and look at the run and the movement from Kiefer Moore on that goal, and you will see how good that was.
Yeah,
and
Kiefer Moore channeling his inner Ian Rush.
Wales need to play better, though. It's Germany v France tomorrow night, Gab. You're not as confident about my boys as I am, are you?
No,
you're just saying that to troll me.
I'm not trolling you. You're jinxing me. I'm wearing my sandals with socks. I'm German for a night. I've been asked to do this. Obviously, we've got a whole back and forth going on the website.
Peace coming up soon.
I don't know. I don't think Germany are as rubbish as some people make them out to be.
I'm with you.
And that midfield is really good. Dare I say, maybe even that midfield as a whole is more talented than France's midfield.
Come on. Let's behave.
All right. Fabio Paratici has been officially appointed as Tottenham's managing director for football, and Paulo Fonseca should come in on Wednesday. Jules, I sense many Spurs fans aren't as excited as they should be.
No, you're right. I think you've got a great sporting director at Spurs now, which is something that you've been missing, I think, for a few years. And again, Steve Hitchin has done a good job in guiding the recruitment with Daniel Levy. Part of me, though, Phil, and you can call me a cynic here, Gab, but now, if something goes wrong into the recruitment or something, Daniel Levy can say, hey, it's not my fault. It's his fault.
We've seen him do that before. But they should be excited for Fonseca. He's very good. Trust us on it.
Yeah, this is good. Daniel Levy has issued his chairman's message, Gab. He noted that Tottenham's debt is amongst the highest in the world and that they would protect their interests. So does that mean that there's no move for Harry Kane in the summer?
He actually said it was technically the highest in the world, even higher than Barcelona. I think obviously not all debt is the same.
No.
The good news, which you also pointed out, it's stadium debt, it's long-term debt, it's manageable. You know, that's the most important thing.
Yeah.
Can you service your debt? On the Harry Kane thing, I read a whole column about this. I don't change my view. Protect the interest, to me, means Kane only goes if we get an enormous amount of cash. And I don't see who's going. An enormous amount in the current climate means 120, 150. I don't see who's going to give you that. Because the clubs who can afford that can use it to get a Haaland or an Mbappe, maybe, no?
Yeah, but in a year time, and you can get Kane now, and I think Pep is thinking more short-term than long-term anyway, no?
Yeah, Kane-Mbappe partnership for Pep, how about that?
Oh, my God.
Jules, I'm not trolling Arsenal fans, I promise.
No, because you could say
this about most clubs. In fact, it would make for a really, really good piece, ones who got away. But there's a piece in The Athletic I read this morning that notes that Danielle Mellon, Serge Gnabry, Ismail Benacer, and Yunus Musa were all at Arsenal, and they were sold for a combined $8 million, whereas today they're probably worth $200 million. I don't want to ask. I know all the cases are different.
They're
all
different.
This one was unhappy, blah, blah, blah. Yeah. But can you – we've all spent time around young players on scouting. Mm. There's a long time. Why is it so hard to spot talent and define the fit? Because surely – somebody brought them there, right?
Yeah.
And then at some point, somebody said, you know what? We're better off with somebody else. Again, I don't want to pick on...
The question is not so much, why is it so hard to spot talent? For me, it's all about the timing. So Ismail Benacer doesn't come when he did at 16 and a half to Arsenal. But he stays in France for one more year, comes at 17 and a half, and maybe the whole story is different. Same with Daniel Malen coming from Holland when he did.
Too young then is your suggestion.
But then for others it's fine. Cesc Fabregas comes in at 16 and there's no problem. And I just think it's timing that you can't really assess before or even work out completely well because there's different reasons why it didn't work for Ismail and it couldn't or why it didn't work for Jeff Renadelaide and why it worked for Cesc or for Clichy. Or for others that were in a similar position.
But it seems to me that it's something that if a club can get right, and I compare this with another London club, Chelsea, where Chelsea produced an enormous amount. They spent tons on youth level. You were telling an anecdote off air about, you know, about your kid playing against a bunch of future Chelsea players or future Chelsea youth players.
The future is bright, trust me.
Other than Declan Rice, I can't think of other
that's
Chelsea.
Not true. Kakuta, you've got you. If we look, if
no,
we
no,
look...
no, 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 no. I'm sorry. All right. Okay, Gael Kakuta. Okay, all these people, if they were still at Arsenal, would be getting regular playing time and making the team better, right? I mean, Musa's still very young, right?
Gael Kakuta,
the only way he gets into Stamford Bridge is if he buys a ticket, right? At this stage. You can't bring up Gael Kakuta.
I thought you meant of high-profile examples of
players who didn't work out.
Players young who doesn't work out.
No. I'm talking about guys who they were high-profile youngsters, didn't work out for them at the club. And the club, if they could have it back, they would have taken a different approach because they would have contributed, right? So I think Declan Rice would fit that.
Declan Rice is even different.
And even then he's different.
Same with Kane.
Sancho, for example, is one that, you know, you would assume they would have him back, but at least they got a bunch of money for him.
Sancho, I've got a bit of more of an issue because I think the Sancho, and we, just quickly on that, and I think it's almost, you need a show to do that.
Yeah.
Sancho to me is like, we can't bring through two prodigies in Sancho and Foden. It has to be one or the other. We can't, there's no room in that team with Pep to have two 17-year-old, 18, 19 that you take time and you invest time in and money to make them the next big thing. There's no room for two. And it's actually really rare that in clubs like City that you've got room for two anyway. So you choose one and you pick Foden and you sell Sancho and then you sell him for as much money as you can for a 17-year-old and you get 8 million.
Yeah.
And now he's worth 100 million easily. So maybe that's a bit different, but I think it's an amazing subject. It's a great debate to have because I don't think if you ask them today, you don't have any regrets on those players. You can't because that Malen played in the youth teams. I don't think the attitude was completely right, to be honest. The talent was there. He didn't want to wait. Okay, but sometimes you have to wait.
The point is, today, Gnabry would be a starter at Arsenal.
Yeah, but
Bennacer would be a starter at Arsenal.
Gnabry was not ready back then. Maybe you can question the loan that they sent him to. Maybe it was not the best of ideas to send him to West Brom.
I just go to reinforce it. It's very, very difficult.
Yeah, it's hard. But it's not so much spotting the talent. It's more nurturing the talent.
And knowing and providing the pathway into the first team.
And having the time, the patience, or not.
I bring this up because Chelsea get criticized for this all the time, right? But all these guys who've left Chelsea to go elsewhere, again, I don't think Patrick Bamford would make much of a difference at Chelsea today. Great player as he is.
Yeah.
You know, Ruben Loftus-Cheek, but Nathaniel Chalobah, you know, like... Very good players, but, you know, it's...
But what's the best way of sending him on loan all the time?
Like
you do, and at times you've got 30 players away on loan.
It's a question mark.
Or selling them, even if it's for less money, like you did with Gnabry or Bennacer or others.
All the guys at Barcelona. Adama Traore, would he... You know, Mauro Icardi.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, these are the guys who were there, who left, who moved on, but... Would they move the needle at Barcelona? Would Icardi be a fit at Barcelona?
I don't know. It's fascinating. Joao Cancelo has tested positive for COVID and will miss the rest of the Euros. How big of a loss is this, Gab? For him, of course, he never played in any big tournament, so that's a big shame. And for Portugal?
I think it's a blow in many ways. I mean, the small silver lining is obviously, you know, you do have two experienced alternatives, a right back in Ricardo Pereira and Nelson Semedo. I think Cancelo could obviously fill in at left back too. The one thing is just think tactically, and we've spoken so much, it's a mystery how they're going to line up. Mm. I wonder if maybe you aren't better off with more defensive fullbacks, given what we think he's going to have to do further up the pitch and what he's comfortable with. Cancelo obviously very much... An attacking
fullback. But in terms of creating chances, production.
Oh, no question.
Against Israel in the last game, he was so good, for example.
Tell you what, he could be playing in midfield easily. Brazil beat Venezuela, or more accurately, what's left after the rash of COVID cases, 3-0. Chules, Neymar looked sharp.
He did, but I mean, if he didn't look sharp in a game like this.
In the second half.
Venezuela was understandably so bad because he was there. The B team, probably even more C team. So I'm not sure how much we can really judge Brazil and Neymar on this game and how much we can take away from it. Because it was almost, had Venezuela forfeited, Brazil would have won 3-0. It would have been exactly the same, pretty much.
Pretty much.
Colombia beat Ecuador 1-0 in their opener. Gab, how about that Cardona goal? Wow.
I love when people are smart about set pieces. And by the way, keep an eye out. I think several teams in this Euros as well have enlisted the help of, we might see some funky things on set pieces, especially perhaps Sweden and Belgium. What I loved about this is they were just super smart. You had a bunch of people standing offside who were decoys, the 1-2. I don't know if the plan with the header, because he was very close to the offside. I don't know 100% to what the game was planned, but it looked cool. They had to watch it again on VAR. Wait, is everything right? Because there's so much stuff going on. But a good goal. I feel a little for Ecuador.
They played well.
I think some people had them as dark horses in this tournament. The good news about the Copa America is that you play a bazillion games to go from 5 teams to 4 teams.
I mean, come on.
I think we'll see them again in the knockouts. United States men's national team prospect Conrad de la Fuente could be on the move. Jules, a loan to Marseille, perhaps?
Yes, I think that's the idea. Gab, maybe even a permanent move for around €5 million. He's a young kid. He's been involved with the first team last season. We've seen him a little bit coming on in the Champions League, for example, as well. He's young and he's very raw, but certainly I think it would be easier for him to go to Ligue 1 and learn the trade and play more and get experience than in La Liga, with Barcelona. On loan might have been different, but
I'm assuming if they sell him, it's going to be one of those sales that Barcelona does with the Recompra.
Either they can buy him back or certainly a percentage on a future sale in case he becomes amazing. And for Marseille, they've got an American owner. And I think for the Marseille brand, certainly in the US, that can't do any harm as well to have one of a very promising US men national team player. Sticking with Barcelona as well, Philippe Coutinho has been linked with Leicester. Gab, does that make any sense to you?
It makes sense to me that Barcelona should try to cash in on Coutinho or even just loan him somewhere so he can play so you get his wages off the book. Obviously, he had a really bad injury last year, which I think really limited him.
Hardly played in the second half of the season.
No, hardly played at all. Yeah. And it was a lot of little... Remember, we had Kia Jurapshin on the tap and explained that. It was a bunch of little niggly things. So I want to see Coutinho play again. I think he's got a lot of football left in him. I just don't know that Leicester makes sense because I think his best position is attacking midfield. And, you know, you already have Madison and Harvey Barnes and Ayoze Perez and, you know.
Even Tielemans to some extent when he plays deep line.
Yeah, inevitably, if Tielemans is a play behind Coutinho, you're going to see a different Tielemans, as we saw when Tielemans playing for Belgium, for example.
Exactly.
In his last game was a bit different. So, no, I don't think it's Leicester, but I do hope he finds a home. I think it would suit Barcelona and suit him. Kylian Mbappe says he's unsure about his future. Jules, you look all smug, but this must be terrifying for you.
Yeah, it is, but it isn't. I mean, he keeps repeating the same thing, and he won't make his decision before the end of the tournament anyway. So whenever France are out, then I think he will make a decision, extend or not extend. And if he doesn't extend, then what happens? Do you sell him now? You don't. I think he was also reacting to what Nasser Al-Khelaifi had been saying. Do you remember? We talked about that in the previous shows. Give him the time to think, see that the team that you're building for next season, and that might convince him to stay with Neymar, with the others. But yeah, of course, I'm super stressed that he could leave.
I'm assuming the French media pack have a do not ask Mbappe
We tried yesterday when he came in the press conference.
What's the point? What's he going to say? He's not signing to extend.
No, but you know what's really funny is that we keep asking the question in a different way. So, Gab says, what do you make of what Gab said or what do you make of what Nasser said? But every time, he's so intelligent that it doesn't matter. Italy looked good, Gab, in the opener on Friday. And they haven't conceded in 9 games now. They're unbeaten in 28. And the record is 30 from the 1930s.
The record we're shooting for is 35 with Spain.
Yeah. And now they play Switzerland on Wednesday. But never mind, let's talk about Donnarumma and that potential move to PSG that everybody, including L'Equipe, and said that could happen very, very soon. He could sign and be loaned out to a club in Italy, probably. What do you make of it?
Look, I think, and again, we've had further confirmation that his wage package isn't $12 million net a year. It is much closer to what Milan were offering, which is $8 million net, including an easily attainable bonus. I this has got to be playing in the back of his mind. I don't see how it couldn't. He says, wait a minute. So I go to Paris, and I'm not a Paris Saint-Germain. I get sent on loan somewhere where I might not even be playing in the Champions League. I mean, and I'm not even getting all this extra money.
Look, you work for Courtois. when he went to Chelsea and then went to Atletico Madrid on loan for 2 years, you know, he was not unhappy.
With all due respect to Thibaut Courtois, who is a phenomenal goalkeeper, he went to Atletico Madrid.
Yeah.
Okay.
Okay.
First of all, that war Champions League perennial team. Secondly, Thibaut Courtois hadn't achieved at that age what Gigi Donnarumma had achieved.
True as well. I'm just trying to give you examples of it can work too.
It's fine. But I think, again, I go back to this. Milan won this one. Milan lost. This is a big L for Mino, right?
Yeah.
It's fine. It's, you win some, you lose some. It's the nature of the beast. But I don't like people are spinning it as if, like, oh, look, he's a genius now. No, he's not.
No.
He's not getting 12 million euros net year. And if he does go on loan, then that is an L. And yeah, it's better than ending up on the bench behind Navas if that's the way Poch goes with it.
Yeah,
so.
Definitely.
All right, that brings us to an end. But we're in the midst of the Euros, which we'll be back on Thursday.
Yeah, it went so quick. We have to be back on Thursday.
Time flies when you're having a good time. Until then, love the game, love your neighbor, love yourself.